From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play. Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are, with Danzy and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is, yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
At last, where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Danzy and Corey Club.
Hello, this is Danzy, and welcome to show number 46 of Coffee with Kenobi, a Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. Filling in for Corey Club is our good friend and co-host, Jeff McGee.
Hello, everybody. A special shout out to Mediocre Jedi, Mike Audette, Neil Lowry, Dennis Keithley, Angela Souse, Mark Sutter, Graham Densham, Jesse, and Laughing Says for their contributions to our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page. By supporting our Patreon page, you too can win a coffee chat podcast of your very own. Check out our webpage or the show notes for more information. You can also support our show through our Amazon.com and Fandango affiliate links on the site. Purchase your Force Awakens ticket through our website today. And as always, I'd like to invite everybody to head over to Marvin Dog Media to check out the podcast offerings we have over there.
In today's show, Freddie Prinze Jr. returns as we discuss the beginning of Season 2 of Star Wars Rebels. We'll also discuss updates on the Lucas Museum, Force Awakens character posters, as well as a Coffee with Kenobi meetup at Walt Disney World this November.
In collector news, Dan Z reviews Disney Infinity Toy Box Speedway, and we look at offerings from Kohl's. We also share more of your feedback and introduce our topic for show number 47.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Oh, wait. This is interesting. You found something.
I'm about to let everyone in on the secret.
For our first news story, we're going to look at Force Awakens character posters that just came out this week. A ton of reactions, some positive, some not as positive. Overall, what did you think about these?
I think they look great. I think they're a lot of fun. I love the only thing that bugs me, the Han Solo one, somehow the way it's drawn with his blaster sort of looks like his eye is sitting too low. His right eye is sitting too low. Maybe that's just me. But I think they're a lot of fun, and I love, you know, I'm big on color.
You just killed this poster for me.
Did I really? Does it not?
I'm staring at him.
Does
like,
it not?
Oh, dang it.
It looks droopy, right?
And I can sort of see that. I think it's just the way the gun is positioned.
But anybody who knows me, who listens to Comics with Kenobi, knows that I'm big on color. And so I love the lightsabers with the different colors, and I love the Princess Leia one, I think, is just stunning.
See, that's my least favorite.
Really?
Yes.
I love that you can see her entire face.
Now, the thing for me about Carrie Fisher's is, I mean, it is cool that you get to see her whole face, and the fact that we get to see another one of our beloved, you know, big three from the original trilogy. I think just the green light, I understand what they're doing covering the one eye, and that will probably be more obvious to us once we see the film. Which, by the way, the posters now say, hers says December 17th. I don't know if you noticed that before. The rest of them say December 18th. Hers is December
17th. Interesting. I didn't notice that until you just said that.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it is coming out the 17th, even though 18th's the official day. 17th's the preview days. But for this one, just the way that her eye is covered, the rest of them are covered purposefully with some sort of a weapon or a staff, and this is just light. And the thing that makes me a little nervous is she clearly is in some sort of control room or strategy room. It reminds me of the end of A New Hope, when everyone was doing the battling and flying around their X-Wings, and she's just back at the base. And my hope is that, obviously, she's a strategist and a political leader and a leader of people, but I hope she gets to see action, too. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. The other thing is, you were talking about that saying December 17th, the verbiage underneath it is a little different than on the other posters as well. So maybe this is just like an early mock-up.
It could be.
or something. But yeah, I thought about that as well. I actually would not have as much of a problem if she was sort of the mastermind behind everything. Because
me either.
But I do see what you're saying. It would be nice to see her in action, because the last time we saw her, she was pulling her weight, as it were, on the battlefield.
I'll say
with all the other guys, all the boys, I should say.
There's a lot of scuttlebutt, if you will, about her hair. I don't really have an opinion on her hair either way. I think she's a great character, obviously an iconic character, and they're obviously not going to have, if she does have a lightsaber in this film, they're obviously not going to show it this way through a poster that comes out, you know, a few weeks before the film. So I don't really know what I was expecting. I still enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. But the others, the ones that stand out to me, the two that are my favorite, let's take a guess. All right, let's play the guessing game. Corey and I do this. So on the count of three, give me your top one, and I'll give you my top one of all of these, okay?
Okay.
On the count of three. Ready? One, two, three. Ray. Oh, yeah. Leia, Rey is definitely my favorite. How do you feel about the Rey one?
Oh, I think it's great. And again, I love
it. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
It just looks dry. It looks dry, and I'm assuming she's on Jakku there, mm-hmm. which is a desert planet. The whole thing, yeah, it just looks very. It looks dry. It looks arid, and I love it. And
I would want one of these, but my second favorite. We'll do this 1, 2, 3 with your second favorite. Ready?
Okay.
You have it in your mind?
Yes.
In your mind's eye. All right. 1, 2, 3.
Rey.
Han Solo. I love how you said that. Rey. Tell me why you like Rey.
Well, it's just like I said. It just looks very arid, and it looks. I think this tells us what we need to know about Rey. She's ready to go. I don't know what it is that she's holding. I'm assuming it's her little. Pike thing that she carries with her, the big gun.
It's that staff. Did you see it at Celebration Anaheim?
I did not. I didn't stand in line for 12 hours to go see the props from the movie that hasn't come yet.
Wow, how do you really feel? We went the first day, like within moments of just being in there, and there was maybe a 20-minute line. We waited with the guys from Full of Sith, so it was a pretty pleasant experience. And the staff looks like a bunch of the lightsabers attached to one another.
That's kind of what I thought, and that's kind of why I like it. And it just, yeah, it just she has this look of resolve
mm-hmm.
on
very,
her face.
Very determined, focused.
Yeah, that business. I really like, that I really respond to.
It's stunning. The Solo one is just incredible.
And it is. It is.
I mean, does anyone age like Harrison Ford? I hope I do.
I already have.
Well,
I feel like
there you go.
With me, it's not so much the year as it is the,
the mileage.
What's the word I'm thinking of? Yeah, mileage.
Yeah. Thanks, Indy. Now, this is one that the two that I would buy if it was an option, I'm sure would be Solo and right there. They're pretty wonderful. He looks amazing. He's in his 70s and he still looks like the rugged scoundrel that we all know and love.
He really does. And again, I love the colors on this one as well. There's a sort of faint reddish pink hue coming in from the right. With the blue light coming in from the left, and I do like it. You know, apart from him having, you know, a droopy eye, it is very stunning.
The Kylo and the Finn ones are nice, but I don't have really much of an emotional attachment to those two characters. I don't know anything about them.
Right? Yeah, have you seen my favorite one so far? Is the Luke Skywalker one? Have you seen that one that's been floating around?
You mean it must be a fake one, obviously?
Yeah, it's just black. The whole thing is just black, and it has a little Star Wars Force Awakens logo down in the bottom.
That's clever.
Yeah,
that's clever. I'll give you that. So let us know what you think. What are some of your favorites, and what is it that you like so much about them?
I can't wait to hear. For our next news story, we have some news regarding the George Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. It has, according to Coffee with Kenobi, has officially cleared a big hurdle. The Chicago City Council has finally approved the project. And Dan, I know you're. Got to be very excited about this, because this is in your backyard, isn't it?
I am. It's a very enjoyable 2-hour drive for me. So
what you're saying is, when I drive the 18 hours to come see you, I can sit in the back while you drive us the other 2 hours up into Chicago.
Nothing would make me happier. I hope that that happens before this actually comes to fruition. But yes, that would be pretty great. And the way they've got it designed, and there are all kinds of pictures online. We have it, of course, on Coffee with Kenobi. The Tribune is our source for this, but there was a pending lawsuit in federal court filed by the Environmental Preservation Group, Friends of the Park, and I think there are a lot of concerns that they have about it. First, they're upset about the design, and they're like, you know, people are very protective of their land, and that's the one thing they're not making more of, to quote Superman the movie.
Right.
So it's a big deal. What I like is that the Bears, who are my favorite football team, even though they're horrible this year, the Bears were concerned about the parking, but basically the parking that they're going to build here, the museum and the Bears are going to be able to share that. So that's pretty cool. As long as they don't share the way Jay Cutler does the ball, but that's another podcast.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah, it's very exciting. I have a lot of high hopes and aspirations for this museum, and based on my conversations I've had with people from Lucasfilm and others, it sounds like it's going to be pretty spectacular. In fact, in Lucasfilm, they still have a lot of George's art and some of his collectibles and amazing artifacts, because he's such a film historian as it is. This is going to be stunning.
I agree. And if it looks like the design does already, it looks like a building out of Star Wars, which is outstanding.
Absolutely.
It would only add to the, I guess it wouldn't really add to the Chicago skyline, because it doesn't look that tall, but it will certainly add to the
landscape of the lake.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And the culture of the city. I think it's going to be great. Cannot wait.
For our next news story, I'm very excited, and we revealed this earlier this week on the website and on Facebook. We have a meet and greet at Walt Disney World on November 27th. I am actually going to be at Disney World that week. We are our high school.
And I will be jealous.
Yes, you will. But I, you, so you're not going to take the drive from Texas? I mean, how far could it be, really?
Well, I have to work today after Thanksgiving, so.
Well, I guess that is important too. Yes. Well, if by some chance you are able to join us, anyone, it's going to be November 27th from 6:30 to 7:30 Eastern Standard Time on Main Street USA at the Magic Kingdom of Walt Disney World at Starbucks. And it's going to be a lot of fun for me. Aaron Harris is going to be there. He is, of course, the special correspondent for Star Wars Weekends. Does such an amazing, amazing job. He really set the bar for how to cover conventions for us, and it's pretty cool. I've never actually met him face-to-face, so it'll be great to hang out and meet and chat with him, have a cup of coffee with him in person. So, Aaron, that's going to be so much fun. I know Robert's going to be there, too. We're going to have a great time, and there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. We're going to have a live Q&A. We're going to get a chance, if you're there, to answer our five questions, and there's a lot of info on the website, so go ahead and check that out. Click on the Facebook event page and sign up to join us. It's going to be a great time.
This is how simple Jeff is. You guys announced this the other day, and then I, you know, Aaron and I are online friends, like you, we've never met in person, but he was, I guess, he'd gone to the park, so he was periscoping a lot of stuff, and I thought it was happening that day. Because, you know, I'm not so good with the details, and I was going, oh, is Dan already down there? And I just got very confused.
And now you're not. I didn't know he was periscoping. That's great.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Good, good. So far, we've got a respectable turnout, and I know it's really asking a lot. I mean, you know, it's not everybody's in the Orlando area. It's a long way to go. It's the day after Thanksgiving, so there's all kinds of stuff going on. So we understand that it's not going to be possible, but if it is something that you're able to do, we'd certainly love to see you there.
And now, your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio.
Hello, everybody. It's Rob here from The Bearded Trio, bringing your latest espresso shot with The Bearded Trio, your news mix on Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, and John Williams. And let's start with some Indiana Jones news. Frank Marshall has recently done an interview with Total Film magazine, and the subject got on to Indiana Jones and the possibility of a fifth movie in the franchise. Rumours of Chris Pratt taking the hat from Harrison Ford has lit up the internet in previous months, so the producer decided to put the record straight. He said, "There are a lot of rumours. We haven't even sat down to talk about Indy yet. At some point, we'll sit down. But there's a bunch of people who could probably take the baton. But we're not doing the Bond thing," he said, "where we're going to call somebody else Indiana Jones. We'll have to figure this out." Now, this doesn't mean that someone else couldn't take the lead role in an Indiana Jones film, but what it does look like is the lead role would not be Indy himself. As the quote mentions, they are still figuring it out, but From that, I get that we may see an Indiana Jones film, but with a new hero. So it seems that if someone does take the lead role in indie film, they will unlikely be the Indiana Jones that we've come to love. Someone will take over the hat and likely the whip. After all, we saw Indy given the hat at the beginning of Last Crusade. But if they do this, would you like it? And who would you like to see in the lead role of Indiana Jones 5? Let us know on the Coffee with Kenobi website. Now, sticking with Frank Marshall, and anyone who passed London South Bank in the last few weeks was in for a prehistoric shock when a life-size model of the Mosasaurus was erected, apparently bursting from the River Thames. The model was to mark the release of Jurassic World on Blu-ray and DVD. A 7-meter-high structure was unveiled at the observation point at sunrise, apparently bursting through the bank near the Oxer Tower and gobbling a great white shark for breakfast. Jurassic World's producer Frank Marshall attended the unveiling of the installation, and he said, "It's incredible to see the Mosasaurus come to life here in London. This huge water beast played a crucial part in the film, so we're thrilled to be able to unveil it to the British public today. It's the biggest creature brought to life on screen in all the Jurassic films, and the detail in which it has been created here today is just jaw-dropping. Industrial Light and Magic has added BAFTA-winning visual effects supervisor David Vickery to its expanding London studio. In addition to supervising effects work, Vickery will also provide creative oversight on the studio's other projects, while studio creator director Ben Morris takes on Star Wars Episode 8 as production visual effects supervisor. Vickery will work closely with Sue Lister, ILM's London executive in charge. Most recently, Vickery served as the production visual effects supervisor on Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. He is well known for his work as a visual effects supervisor on films such as Sherlock Holmes, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, Fast and Furious 6 and Jupiter Ascending. So he's at it again, William Shatner. No, not his singing, you'll be pleased to know. The 84-year-old actor who played Captain Kirk on Star Trek has been using Twitter to troll Star Wars fans, and this time he's taken a pop at the recent Force Awakens poster that was released. Now, he argues that some of the characters look familiar and posted a comparison to the Rebel flight suits and the 1970s TV show Space 1999. Now, he also argues that Star Wars has stolen its recent villains. Now, he means the Stormtroopers from the 1970s Battlestar Galactica, referring to the Cylons. Now, of course, he's just trolling, and it's a clever way to keep his name in the mix. Although his last troll tweet was a little below the belt. He said, "Those that can, do Star Trek, and those that can't, do Star Wars." Many fans think it was a cheap shot at J.J. Abrams, who, as you know, directed the first two Star Trek movies featuring Chris Pine and company. So what do you think? Harmless fun? Or do you think William Shatner should concentrate on bringing us another album? I joke about that last bit, honestly. Let us know your opinions on William Shatner and his recent Star Wars trolling. So that's it for another Espresso Shot with the Bearded Trio. I hope you enjoyed the Espresso news. Don't forget to check out the Bearded Trio website for all the latest on Spielberg, Lucas and John Williams. We have a review of Bridge of Spies up as well as other movies and soundtracks. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard, each sold separately. From Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
For our first item in collecting news, Dan has a review for us of the Disney Infinity Toy Box Speedway. So Dan, I have just one question. What is the Disney Infinity Toy Box Speedway?
That is one question. It is a loaded question. One of the great things about this game, and honestly, is it's all nostalgia. And of course, Star Wars is very nostalgic for a lot of us anyway. But it reminds me very much of Mario Kart. Do you ever play Mario Kart?
Oh, I love Mario Kart.
Isn't it the best?
Yes, it is.
And there have been a lot of pretenders to the throne. To me, the Mario Kart 64 was the best one. And there have been a lot before, a lot since, with various degrees of success. This one comes the closest to the feeling I had for Mario Kart 64 back in college, playing it all the time with our friends. The initial set, it's just like all the other, the toy box mode. The thing about Disney Infinity, as you may recall from our CWK family, if you've heard us talk about this or read our reviews before, is that when you're playing a certain set, you can only use certain characters unless you unlock certain things or what have you. But if you have the characters, let's say, from Frozen, they can't play in the prequel trilogy set or the original trilogy set because they're not compatible. It doesn't cross-pollinate, if you will.
You can't cross the streams.
You can't cross the streams. But Toy Box is different. Anybody can play anywhere, and it's really, really cool. So when I played it, I used Darth Vader. Disney was kind enough to send us all of these figures, and Vader's one I had to use. You can use his powers while you get into the cards, and when you jump in, it's pretty much a free-for-all. It doesn't matter if you're Darth Vader or Tinkerbell. You're pretty much the same behind the wheel of the vehicle, as far as I can tell. But there are 9 tracks in the Toy Story. There's the Agrabah Raceway, which is Aladdin. There's the San Francisco Circuit from Big Hero 6. There's Arendelle from Frozen. There's Gravity Falls from the TV show Gravity Falls, which I'm not really that familiar with. I do know it's on XD.
I've heard nothing but good things about it. I really need to check it out.
It's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be really funny. I've seen a lot of commercials for it when you watch Rebels on the Disney XD app, too. You've got Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Road to Nowhere, Monster Mayhem from Monsters, Inc., Halloween Tune Highway from Nightmare Before Christmas, Dunes of Tatooine, of course, from Star Wars, and Sugar Rush Raceway. I did play all of them. I will say the coolest ones to me, the Monsters, Inc. one is really, really spectacular. The Gravity Falls one is a ton of fun. San Francisco, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, that is spectacular. Tatooine is fun because it's very much in the Star Wars universe, obviously. It reminded me a lot of, remember the old Nintendo Pod Racer game?
Oh, yeah, the 64.
The aesthetics and things. It very much reminds me of that. So it's really, really cool. There are battle modes where you can get certain things and shoot rockets and get cars in front of you, things like that. There are all kinds of competitions and premises. It's a lot of fun. I think it's gone very well, very successfully. There are different things you can unlock. And like I said, you can use just about anybody. And there's discs you can add to it just to the gameplay overall. And it's not a disc either. It's like a little clear piece like in the play sets where you set it on the base. And then you're able to unlock the game. It's great fun. Like I said, it's just like the other ones. They have a very unique appeal about them. This is very much, if you enjoy Mario Kart, this is it. And the cars are pretty cool, too. You've got Vader's got a special car. You can use the cars from the Tomorrowland Speedway if you're familiar with the Magic Kingdom and Disneyland. There's a lot of Easter eggs for Disney fans. It's great fun. What can I say? How many times can I say great fun?
At least one more.
Marvin Dog Media. So yeah, definitely check it out. It's something that is fun for everybody. It's safe for all ages, which is one of the things I enjoy about the Disney Infinity sets as well. If you're playing Call of Duty and your 2-year-old walks in the room, that's not an ideal situation. If you're playing something Disney Infinity and a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old walks in, then you're safe, and then you can actually play these games with them. So that's one of the reasons I like Disney Infinity so much.
And that's important, yeah. I love those sorts of games, but I sometimes have trouble with racing games, and I noticed this the first time with the episode with N64 Racer.
Mm-hmm.
I would get done playing the game, and then I would leave my friend's house who had the 64. I would try to drive home, and this was at 2 o'clock in the morning. Have you heard this story?
No,
I would go to turn a corner, and I would try to turn the corner as though I were still playing the game. Almost rolled my car once before I figured out, oh yeah, I have a brake I can use. So I had to institute a rule that I have to wait at least 15 minutes once I finish a game before I drive anywhere. I used to do the same thing with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. I would have to fight the urge to jump up on the railing of the stairwell at our apartment building after I'd gotten done playing a game of it. So
you're a dangerous guy.
I'm simple. What can I tell you?
Well, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned the gameplay. I should have brought that up. But the gameplay is quite nice. It's not very complicated. There are little things you can do where you can skid when you're turning so you don't run off the track. It's easy to reverse and get back on your path. I was really pleased with that. I used to be such a video game Jedi, and now I'm so much a Padawan at it because I'm very rusty. So I feel like I picked this up really, really quickly. And of course, I played with the teenagers, and they just made me look like I was a sorry dad, which, you know, maybe I am. But it was, like I said, it's fun for the family. Be sure to check it out and let us know what you think.
The important thing is that you tried.
For our next collector's news story, I want to talk about things that are going on at Kohl's. And Kohl's isn't sponsoring us. We don't have any sort of promotions going on with them. But we are fans. And that's what we are. We're fans of Coffee with Kenobi. And that's fun. And it's one of the great things about The Force Awakens for me, Jeff, and I'm sure you agree. It's just going around and seeing Star Wars product and
everywhere.
Items.
Everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And I'm still very enthralled by this. So I went to Kohl's recently, went to the Kohl's website. They've got so much cool stuff. And I sent you the link. Did you see anything that caught your eye?
I saw a lot of things that catch my eye. The problem is they're all for kids. Like these R2-D2 sneakers. Have you seen these things?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, those are only for little boys. And
they
girls.
Do have some adult ones. And they almost look like Van style, the shoe.
Which
the,
I already have. So shoe.
Same.
Yeah.
Which one do you have?
I actually have two pair. I have the poster art slip-ons, and I have sort of Mondo-looking ones that sort of look inspired by the Marvel comics. I have some lace-ups of those.
Oh, those are cool. I have the lace-up Stormtrooper ones. Those are pretty slick, too. But anyway, back to Kohl's. One of the things that I like, they have a ton of amazing pajamas. They have a lot of cool Christmas sweatshirts that they're supposed to look like ugly Christmas sweaters. They've got some amazing stocking hats that I was really impressed with. They've got like this Under Armour designed t-shirt, long sleeve for if you run outside in the wintertime. And I know my wife usually says the only time I run is if someone is chasing me.
Right, and only run if I'm trying to get chased.
That's right, but I'm trying to get back into shape. So I picked that up. They have actually a lot of cool socks. They've got just about everything.
They've even got some clothes. College t-shirts that have Star Wars characters on them.
Yeah, it's worth a while to check out. In fact, the Bluetooth Millennium Falcon speaker that I got, that I splurged for myself on my birthday a month ago, this is where I first saw it. And they have the Star Destroyer one and the TIE Fighter Bluetooth speaker. And they're gorgeous sculpts, gorgeous models anyway. So, and I know I reviewed that on the show we had with Skywalking Through Neverland. So check out Kohl's. They've got some fun stuff.
They really do. And following up on that, ThinkGeek always has a ton of cool Star Wars stuff, and they're really starting to kind of outdo themselves.
They are.
If you go to their
brick and mortar ThinkGeek stores now.
I did know that, actually. I spoke to someone who actually worked for them a while back, and it was actually the night that I went to see Mr. Ian Desher do an in-store appearance here in Dallas.
Yeah.
Met a guy who works for them, and I was like, they have brick and mortar ones? He said, oh, yeah, there's a couple here and there.
Pretty
and,
cool.
And, yeah. So if we ever get one in the Dallas area, I will probably be spending most of my paycheck there. But we've got a lot of the same, you know, they got some of the ugly Christmas sweaters here as well.
I bought one today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Guess which one I bought. Well, actually, let's tell our CWK family what they look like. What do they look like?
Well, the ones I'm looking at, there's a green one that has a Stormtrooper and a Santa hat, mm-hmm. and a red one with Darth Vader that has... like a Stormtrooper in the Imperial. Yeah, Snowflake. They're supposed to look like snowflakes. So I'm guessing you got the Stormtrooper one.
You're correct. How did you know that?
It looks the most Christmassy of the two.
Attaboy. Yeah, it does. It even says on the bottom, because not everyone celebrates Christmas for Christian reasons. There are a lot of denominations and beliefs out there, and we respect that. So the red one just has the snowflake and the TIE Fighters and Vader. It doesn't have any Christmas iconography, so to speak. And really, the Stormtrooper one, the only thing that it really does is the fact that it has a Santa hat. But that was good enough for me. Plus, you know, I'm mildly obsessed with Stormtroopers anyway. So right. I definitely got that. And Tom, who I work with, has been on Coffee with Kenobi a number of times. He got the red one. So we went on a little bit of a deal, because if you get multiple ones, you save on shipping, and it's really, really good. So that's what we did.
That's the problem I have with ThinkGeek. Not the problem I have. It's the problem I have when I shop from ThinkGeek, is I always like, I'm only going to get this, but if I just spend another $20, I'll get free shipping.
It's true.
I spend $20 to save 10.
I know. It's totally true.
I actually got one. I have a Star Wars Christmas shirt that I got at JCPenney a couple of years ago. It's just one of the ones that has like the lines going across, and it, you know, it's got like a Darth Vader head. And at the bottom, it's got AT-AT walkers, and everybody always thinks they're camels. They don't realize it's like the greatest covert Star Wars shirt ever.
I have a similar one. It's a long sleeve. You know, they had those ads on Facebook where they, you know, they're only available for a limited time. I bought them last year. If it's Star Wars and you put Christmas on it, I'm going to pull a Jeff McGee and say, take my money.
Shut up and take my money.
It's kind of the trap I fall into.
But some of the other stuff that I've seen on here that might be going on my Christmas list, the Star Wars Death Star waffle maker, I had in one day, I had like four or five people share this on my Facebook page, because everybody knows I love Star Wars and everybody knows I love waffles. I do a poll once a year on my Facebook page asking all of my friends to vote pancakes or waffles. Every year, it comes down to a tie. There's only ever like one or two votes separating the two. First year, it was a tie. The second year, pancakes won. The third year, waffles won. We'll see what happens this year.
Stay tuned, folks.
I prefer waffles because you have syrup receptacles built in. But the other thing that I really like on the page...
Waffles with Watto, the new podcast coming out.
There you go. The other one that I like is not something I would ever be able to wear, but it's the lace-up heels with the lightsabers as the like the stiletto heels. Did you see those?
I find those a little disturbing.
Oh, I think they're awesome.
Do you really?
Yeah, I would totally wear them if I could do so and not break my ankles and several other bones. Yeah, I think it's awesome. And I really do want the Han Solo fridge.
I love that thing so much. It's not very big, and we've talked about it a number of times on the show, but anything Han Solo and carbonite is cool. You can only fit, what did we say, 8 cans in that thing, but man, that would look good in the Coffee with Kenobi Studios. Did you see how it looks at nighttime, too, or when it's dark?
I don't think I have.
Oh, click on it and check it out. There's like, I believe there are 4 images. Be prepared to fork over $150 when you see it.
Well, see, that's the thing. If it was 100, if it was less than that, I would really probably think about it more. But
we could split custody of it.
You're right, though. That does look really cool when it's all lit up.
Isn't that awesome?
See,
it's got a red. It's like when he's being thawed.
See, I'm gonna have a man cave in my new apartment.
See,
and which is gonna be decked out in Star Wars regalia. So this is something I might need to save my money for.
I hear you, brother.
Shut up and save my money.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Our topic for show number 46 is Rebels Season 2. How do you feel about the evolution of the crew of the Ghost so far, as well as the burgeoning Rebel Alliance? Joining us to discuss this topic is returning guest and friend of the show, Freddie Prinze Jr. Freddie, of course, is the voice of Kanan Jarrus, and we are delighted to have him back on Coffee with Kenobi. Welcome back, Freddie.
I'm a little upset that every episode isn't about Rebels, but we can start on a bad note today. That's all right. We'll see if we can improve our behavior.
Well, I think that...
Is there like a big movie coming out or something?
There is something coming out. I can't remember. Is there a sequel to Austin Powers? No, that's not it.
Oh, it's the Kanan comic book that comes out tomorrow.
There you go.
That's what you guys have been talking about.
A little product placement.
Yeah, this is
a shout out for my man Greg. I don't get any money for that.
Well, he's amazing, as are you. This is our fourth time chatting with you on Coffee with Kenobi, where we always love it. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you. We had a great time, of course, meeting you face to face in Anaheim and hanging out a little bit. That was a good experience.
Absolutely. It's a while ago now, man.
Really was. So let's talk about the end of season one. It seemed like Kanan had gone through a pretty powerful character arc. He faces his past, he embraces Jedi identity. Seemed like he was all set. And now we have this new angle that appears, and it introduces Kanan to a new character arc, the Return of the Clones. Describe that process for Kanan.
Yeah, I would, to address what you said specifically, I would say he's just now addressing his past. The end of season one is sort of the acceptance of letting go, right? That old Luminara tale from Clone Wars, which is have no attachments. And when he feels that Ezra's been killed, been murdered, and there's nothing left for him to fear he won't be able to protect, he just annihilates the Inquisitor. And that's sort of one of his Jedi trials. I think he's feeling confident and good. And I don't think the past has been hit as hard as it gets hit in our clone story. I never know the names of the episodes. I just know what happens inside them. I know is Rex is back, but it's in that moment that I think he's sort of, it's thrown in his face, right? It's like a baby on your doorstep. You know what I mean? You're like, are you serious? I have to deal with this. So that's kind of what he's going through. And that's why it comes out kind of raw and humble in the animation and in the performance, because he's going back, he's regressing emotionally, right? He's letting go of all his smirkiness and the power of the Kanan eyebrow and all the sarcasm, and he's being young and honest and truthful with someone that he's supposed to be a mentor and a big brother and a master and a father to, basically. So it's a very out of character moment for Kanan. When I read it in the script, I started texting with Dave right away. We got that script pretty early, and we discussed it a lot, how we were going to do it. I was sick the day they recorded it, and I had to record it solo with just Dave and I. But it ended up being a lot better, I think, because of that, because it was a much more intimate vibe. There was no one else there. I let myself kind of do a whole bunch of different emotional things, and we just sort of, not we didn't pick, but we tried so much stuff that we liked that it was sort of, you know, whatever Dave picked, we were both going to be comfortable with. I mean, we had a take where I was like full on bawling and broken down like a little baby.
Wow.
And I, you know, I probably would have been able to do that in front of the team. I'm really comfortable around him, but it probably would have taken a lot longer. Whereas when it was just Dave and I, it was pretty easy. So that whole like scene is just, it's like post-traumatic syndrome for a soldier. You know, you're asking them to go back and revisit something that's the most horrible thing they've had to deal with. And so we spent a lot of time and effort and energy on just that scene alone, man. Just that short little monologue. I mean, we must have spent a good hour just doing take after take. We did some other stuff. We came back to it again because I had an idea, and then Dave got an idea off that really kind of like took hold, and that's sort of the final performance that you guys got to see. But we'd never done that before with any other scene in the series so far, and we haven't since.
Well, speaking of new characters, and you mentioned a meeting Rex and the crew there. In the episode, The Lost Commanders, Kanan reveals his attitude towards the clones, and Kanan refers to them as clones, not people. Are clones people?
For me, 100%, yeah. If you are capable of thinking for yourself and establishing your own morality, as some of the clones did, then you're a person. For Kanan, his last interaction with them is murder. They killed his mother, his teacher, his professor, his master, his sifu, his sensei. I mean, every whatever word is the most important one to you as far as a connection, you know, that's his image of clones. And so his first response is the correct response for what he's had to go through, which is pull out my lightsaber and I'm going to kill these guys. He doesn't see the scars on the side of their heads. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't know the Rex history. He doesn't know how selfless and humble and loyal Rex is. He's probably one of them. He probably embodies all those things more than like any other character in the history of TV or film. But he's not privy to that. The guys that looked exactly like Rex slaughtered his master. So, you know, when I'm reading that, knowing the history and knowing what he went through, you know, I felt really good. I enjoyed that reaction. A couple people thought that Kanan was like okay with it when Wolf was like, hey, sorry. And Rex is like, ah, it's all right. We make mistakes. But if you look at Kanan's reaction, I'm not defending my performance. If you look at his reaction, Kanan doesn't trust him at all. Like he hasn't earned anything. And at the end of that episode, he says, you know, it wasn't easy and it's still not. So don't think that everything's groovy and cool between Rex and Kanan. They're going to be forced to work together throughout the entire season. And perhaps beyond, who knows? But they don't get along. You know what I mean? It's going to be funny sometimes, like Murtaugh and Riggs. and it genuinely is. I mean, you'll see like the influence, but because it has to be, they literally are oil and water. And then at other times it's going to be like the two uncles, the strict one and the fun one, the one who makes you work out and focus on your martial arts versus the one that wants to take you out to shoot guns. And that's Ezra's connection and relationship to the two of them. So I had two uncles like that. My uncle Bob Wall, who's my godfather, he trained Bruce Lee when Bruce came to America and had a very Eastern philosophy and was amazing. He literally is in the original group of Black Belt Hall of Famers. That's how old school he is. His best friend was Chuck Norris and Gene LaBelle. Wow. So those were the guys that I spent a lot of time with when my mom either, you know, had other things going on that she was having to work out, or in summers where she wanted me to have a strong male influence in my life. Yeah, I lived with him and his two daughters and his wife, my god sisters, Kara and Shanna, who are both, they are not now because they don't train. But when I was a teenager, they could whoop most guys' asses. They were so tough. But and they're both gorgeous. So they look like, you know, pretty little flowers. But they were Ronda Rousey before Ronda Rousey was even born. But anyway, wow. You know, my life with him was very strict and regimented. And they had he had a big house in Tarzana, California, which was like the nice neighborhood in the original Karate Kid. So they had a big backyard, and instead of having gardeners, he took care of everything himself, and it was very important to him. And I would have to spend an hour with him just gardening and pruning and cleaning and watering. And I was a kid, man. I was 8, 9 years old. I wanted to play, and I would have to do all that before he would teach me martial arts, which I liked, but it was 6 hours a day. And so everything had to be perfect and flawless. And if I made a mistake, it was the 80s. So the punishments were more acceptable back then than they would be now. And then I had my uncle Jimmy, who was my mom's brother. He passed away, but he was a Vietnam War veteran. And he was the uncle who was like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to shoot a gun. And here's how you put it together. And this is what a condom is. And this is how you eat a chili dog. And this is how you make a burger yourself. Like, he was that guy. And so I always wanted to hang out with him. And he had a Harley Davidson. You know what I mean? Like, he was the man. My godfather had a Cadillac, you know, so that was cool. But once you get on a Harley, a Cadillac is, you know, like, it's a grandpa car, man.
That's funny.
I didn't even have to wear a helmet. It was like 1982. So it was a very rich and wonderful experience for me without having a father. And Ezra is exactly that. He has a father who people are going to find out a lot about this season, and it will leave Ezra with a bit of a shoe to fill, so to speak, which I can definitely relate to. And that pressure gets intensified under Jedi training, which is high pressure, even though you're supposed to stay calm. Whereas that pressure gets alleviated when you get to go bust caps with Uncle Rex. So right. Ezra's journey season two is like I said, there's some Lethal Weapon where he's almost Leo Getz, like Joe Pesci, like, okay.
And then he goes to the subway drive through.
Yeah, man, yeah, exactly. We won't say that line on your podcast, but it's very funny. So he goes through a lot of that season two. So you're going to see rapid growth as far as Ezra's military and Jedi training, which will greatly prepare him for the future. And you'll see a lot of struggle between he and I, and you'll see a lot of, you know, fun and games between he and Rex, and you'll see Rex and I bump heads because of that. That's the 45 minute answer to your question, but it requires a lot of, you know, I'll say this incorrectly just because it makes me laugh, but poetic waxing. But, but I think in the Star Wars world, that's, you know, it's appropriate to have everything in the right perspective.
Most certainly. And of course, on our show, we love looking at things through a critical lens, which is why you're such a great guest to have on. And
you guys do it more than me.
Plus being a high school literature teacher, I love metaphor. And Rebels is so full of metaphor, particularly with Kanan and his journey that he goes through. So let's look, and we have a small sample size because at the time of this recording, we've only seen a few episodes from season two. But when he explains his bias towards Rex and the clones to Ezra, Kanan explains the story with his lightsaber disassembled. How much will that play a part in season two and beyond?
As far as...
Well, to me, it's like when he disassembles that lightsaber and he starts to talk about Order 66, he's, again, detaching himself from being a Jedi, and he's literally weaponless while he's very vulnerable. I think that's a powerful metaphor.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to, in that moment, I think that's specifically what it is. In the future, the stakes get high so quickly. I mean, you'll see tomorrow night with Sarah's debut. Like you'll see the stakes go from where they're at now to 10, and as the season goes on, you won't believe how high that number gets. So Rex and Kanan, it's on the job training. Like with all of Kanan's Jedi training, think of it this way: season one, Kanan may be Ezra's master, but the Inquisitor is Kanan's master. The Inquisitor teaches Kanan how to fight. He doesn't know how to fight. True. The first time they meet, mm-hmm. He gets annihilated. He gets schooled. He gets clowned. He's his master. He's his trial of flesh. Season two, whether he likes it or not, Rex is a master to him. Rex is a teacher. Kanan doesn't have to accept teaching with humility. He never has. He's a pressure player. He's willing to make a sacrifice. And if you're going to fight someone with nothing to lose, you're going to have a really, really, really tough fight. And that's what Kanan represents. So Rex to him, trusting or not, you'll find them. And I actually don't mind saying this. This isn't a spoiler. This is just really freaking cool. You'll find them metaphorically back to back and literally back to back surrounded and 100% trusting in the other's skills and loyalty to the other person in that moment. And when that fight is done, it's Danny Glover and Mel Gibson.
And we saw a little bit of that too already with the sandstorm and the AT-ATs.
That's true. They do talk some trash already to him. Even Ezra talks a little trash with the dust stuff. But you'll see them work together and you'll see them work apart. And I think Rex is definitely the wiser of the two in their relationship. And I think Kanan learns much more from Rex philosophically than Rex will learn from Kanan. And I think, you know, you would have to speak to Dee about what he feels Rex learns. But I think Rex learns there's more than one kind of Jedi he can serve. And when that moment happens, those two become a seriously formidable twosome. I don't want to say too much.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's great. And even also in this scene, I picked up on something kind of similar to something we see earlier in the films. Kanan's kind of putting together his lightsaber, cleaning it out, and he assembles it and looks right down the barrel. Was he going to pull a Luke there? What's up with that?
Yeah, man, I love that. You know, they're gonna do shots like that for fans of the originals, and for also, you know, a lot of other old school movies. I mean, they showed in that teaser that debuted a lot of the new characters we're gonna have. Mm-hmm. There was a shot from straight Sergio Leone with the gunfighter there, the Mandalorian, who's about to draw his weapon.
Oh, nice.
And if you see in the trailer, it's, you know, that's Sabine that they're about to, you know, draw down with. She's the one that makes the challenge. So, and the shot literally is straight out of any Sergio Leone movie ever made. Like, awesome. like Martin Scorsese shooting dice in the air. Like, it's you know who directed it, you know who made it. So there's a lot of cinematic, old school cinematic tributes that there were also in season one, but as we have more episodes this year, you know, there's more opportunities for that. That Mando episode is my third favorite episode of season two. The first two, my two favorites being the finale, which obviously is a two-parter. We wouldn't hose you guys with a 20-minute finale. I hope not. But those are my top two, because I was just like, as a Star Wars fan, like I couldn't be more pleased with every page of dialogue and character and story. And the Mando story is my third. I told you guys in season one that people that were worried about Sabine just sort of being wasted space were going to be really surprised season two, when they see what her lineage is and what her history is, and the type of hell that she's had to go through, and it carries on. I mean, I can't say too much, and I don't want to like spoil things, but you know, as long as people keep watching Rebels, it ain't going to get canceled. So there's plans for these characters to go on, and they're in the works because people are responsive to the show, and people are starting to believe the promises that these characters made in season one. So all those promises are going to come true. Like, people think Zeb is who he is. They're going to find out a ton of history on Zeb. It gets deep, man. Like, when you have more episodes, you can do a lot more. And we got twice as many this year.
Well, we're very excited for all that. And I'm excited.
It is.
I'm ready to watch the marathon right now. Yeah. Let's get this rolling, baby.
So in the same episode with meeting the clones, we get to know some of the other clones. Commander Wolf has also revealed that he's been keeping messages from Rex and the other guys there that Ahsoka had sent. Also alerted the Empire to the crew of the Ghost. Do you think that he got off a little too easy?
He didn't get off easy with Kanan.
That's good to know.
Like I said earlier, just look at the animation. Kanan doesn't relax his gaze upon him in any way, shape, or form. Rex is the wiser of the two. Rex is the one who's able to forgive. He can recognize a mistake based on history versus trying to screw someone over, but Kanan doesn't, and he says at the end of the episode it wasn't easy, and it's still not. So like I said, so the Wolf, you know, his relationship with Wolf will never be what it is with Rex, for obvious reasons. Rex is a different kind of soldier. But after something like that, don't think Kanan's gonna be like, hey, let's call Wolf for help. You know what I mean? Like, you'll ask Gregor to come be your burger cook on the Ghost before you'd work with Wolf.
I'm glad to hear that, because I feel like that was something that was hinted to, addressed, and moved on. But you know, it's going to come back, because that's human nature. And sometimes there's a quick reaction to something, you get time to marinate on it, and it comes back.
It's only forgiveness from Rex. Rex is the only one that lets him off the hook. Kanan stays focused and fixed, and he's pissed off. And he disengages. Like, he doesn't give him a nod of okay, this time it's all right. There's none of that.
There's no knuckles going on there.
No, it's only Rex. And Rex is right. He's right to forgive him. He's correct to forgive him, because these guys are literally suffering from PTSD. Rex is the only one who's sort of been able to be introspective and work out the choices that he made versus the choices that weren't his own. He's the only one who's been able to like handle that and work it out. Gregor's psycho. He's nuts, man. He's, you know what I mean? Like he ain't worked nothing out. He's Murdoch from the A-Team, the original.
I totally agree.
So, you know, it's Wolf is, he's struggling, man, but Kanan doesn't forgive him in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, and that's more authentic too, and that's one of the things that I think people are gravitating towards this series, and clearly so many of us are, because these characters seem very human and breathable because they go through these things that seem plausible. You've got verisimilitude in Rebels.
Say the last part again. You cut out on me.
Yeah, I said you've got verisimilitude in Rebels because it just feels authentic, the what these characters go through and how they react.
Yeah, man, because I feel like everybody knows somebody that's, once you learn about, they did this in Clone Wars. Once you learn about him, it's why people didn't hate Cad Bane. I mean, you hate him, but there were people out there who loved Cad Bane because he's relatable. He represents like the worst in it. It's like, there's like a lot of Donald Trump love in certain states because they say, well, he says what we want to say. Well, if those are the things you want to say, you're a bigoted, racist moron. And that's what Cad Bane represents. Like that's like, I want greed. I want power. I want money. I just want to do it for the cash. No attachments. Do what I want when I want. Yeah, I'll go live in the woods. You know what I mean? That's what Cad Bane represents. You can even, now not all of us, but there's a group of people out there. I dressed up like Cad Bane for Halloween. There's a group of people out there that can relate to his motives. There's a group of people out there that can relate to Anakin going to the dark side to save the person he loves most, or what he thinks will save the person he loves most. And so you forgive those choices, and it's an aw, Anakin, instead of, oh, Anakin. You know what I mean? So it's all these characters have something honest. Obi-Wan, everyone wanted Obi-Wan to either be their grandfather, if it was the original, or their dad, if it was the second three, based on your generation, huh? Right? So I always wished Alec Guinness was my grandpa. When like the 12-year-olds to 16-year-olds saw the second trilogy, you want Ewan to be your dad or your older brother. Like it was the right age demo. So they all represent somebody we know or want to be, and Rebels stayed true to that. You know what I mean? Kanan breaks a lot of rules that a lot of people who have role played Jedi in their role play games have wanted to break, but their game master was like, no, you can't. And now there's a Jedi that can fulfill that need and desire, and they can do it. And now people will start to learn about Sabine, and they'll learn more about Hera and how selfless she's been to not only her crew, but with her lineage as well. I don't want to say too much, but you get the gist. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You guys know what you're going to get. So, you know, these are all things that are powerful storylines that everyone can relate to. And I think where a lot of movies go wrong is they really try to step outside that. And it's like, if it ain't broke, man, don't fix it. Don't overthink yourself. That's a big rule in screenwriting, is don't overwrite. Don't overthink yourself. If you can say it with less words, say it with less words. A lot of things look great on the page, but when you say them out loud, you're like, oh my God, who would talk like that?
Right. Only Aaron Sorkin can get away with stuff like that.
Yeah. And the actors that are looking for that tasty meatball sandwich when they read those scripts. But there's a lot of actors that are like, yo, cut this, cut that. I don't need this. I'm not going to say his name twice in that monologue. You know what I mean? And they're literally chopping it out because they want the most deliberate, direct route to addressing the scene. Like the main rules are, What's your goal? What's your objective? What's the obstacle? And how are you performance wise going to achieve it or fail if you're doomed to fail in the scene, whatever. But a lot of actors want to cut off all the fat so they can get, you know, sort of straight to it. And then there's other actors who see those monologues and they're like, oh, yes, yes. And they eat them up. And I think Star Wars has always been on the simpler side than on the meatier side. And that's why it's more relatable.
Right. Good points, all, of course. Well, I mean, you talked a lot about Kanan, of course, and really it's his humanity. I've often said that to me, Kanan is the most human of the Jedi, which is why I find him so appealing. But I want to talk more about the burgeoning relationship, the mentorship really between Rex and Ezra. And I'm more particularly interested in what kind of conflict that can have for someone like Kanan.
I mean, we discussed some of the conflict earlier.
Right, right. And I, yeah, but it's one
but
thing
as far
like,
as,
yeah, does, is it
as
a threat
far as
to
it
Kanan?
Affects, say again?
Is it a threat to Kanan?
Yeah, he's going to get insecure. Like you said, he's one of the most human Jedi that, that they've put. I, you know, I don't know the whole extended universe, but he shows his flaws more than any of the others. Mm-hmm. He seems to be okay with his flaws more than any of the others. It's probably why he doesn't go to the dark side, because he doesn't deny them like Anakin did. He's very honest with himself. He knows what his limitations are, but you know, he's uber selfless. We've seen that, but he gets immature. I mean, you saw how insecure he got when Lando was like making moves on Hera. So he's definitely, when it comes to a teacher role, which he's not comfortable in because he's never done it and he's not equipped to do it, when that comes into question, or if he's just being belligerent and Rex is telling him to relax, it's going to make him insecure. He's going to be hypersensitive to it. And you'll see that really, really early on. And Rex will also have some fun with it too sometimes, where he knows he's going to get under my skin. And Dee does a great job with those. I say Rex like that's his real name. but Dee does just such a great job with the performance. He totally gets it. It's, you know, you have the guy that did the original. You have the guy who's voiced more voices technically than anyone in the history of Star Wars, because that's he's true. Every single clone. But he has such a cool history with him. He really has. You'll see Rex is not the hard ass that he was. And I don't mean like, you know, he wasn't a drill sergeant, although I guess in the beginning of Clone Wars he was. But
true.
But he's much more. He's an old man, dude. He's seen it all. He's seen it all, and he's had plenty of time in the middle of the driest planet on Earth to think about what he's done and deal with it. And he's okay with it. He's okay that he has been out of contact with Ahsoka Tano and didn't have to be. Like, he's okay with that. He's a different cat. He's on a different level. He's not holding on to pride. Pride isn't something that he believes in. I don't think he believes in hero worship the way Ezra does. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. He's just older and smarter. You guys know your kids look at you like you're superheroes. The last thing we want him to find out is that we're not, but maybe that's the best thing we could do. You know what I mean? It's this sure. crazy line that you walk as a teacher, like you, as you know, or as a parent, as both of you know. So mm-hmm. It definitely is going to make him insecure. It's going to challenge his manhood, his Jedihood, and you know. But it makes for a really good story. And I would say that's their relationship in probably like the first third. No, that's too much. The first like fourth of the show, and then it's not that they're okay with each other, but again, the stakes get too high, and Kanan doesn't have time to whine and complain the way he did when it was, you know, Lando Calrissian and they were just trying to get off a planet. It's way more hardcore season two.
Speaking of season two, you know, we don't talk about too many surprises. I know you've talked about how much is coming up with some other characters and whatnot for the season. For Kanan anyway, what can we look forward to with him growing? Originally, you've talked about kind of some trials he's had to undergo. And I know in the first season it was more of him conquering fear. Would it be this season possibly conquering trust?
I'll say no. My fear is if I say what it is,
don't
it'll
tell
lead us down a dark, dark road.
No spoilers.
That ends in oh crap town, and I don't want to do that.
No, we don't want to know that.
But
no.
it ain't trust this year. I'll tell you that much.
Cool.
Kanan is gonna go. He's on a roller coaster as a Jedi this year, and you'll see him go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, and back again.
So it's like high school.
It's yeah, but I mean,
with lightsabers.
I mean, look, Clone Wars got deep and heavy sometimes, the stuff they had to deal with and the things they had to go through. And I'm not saying we go that far, but it goes deep, man. And he has to overcome some major, major obstacles. I mean, they all do, but we're talking about Kanan right now. Mm-hmm. And it's the type of stuff that changes you forever, man. And it can either make or break you. So I'll leave it at that, but it's definitely not trust. That one might be more an Ezra issue, and I think that's I'd say that actually sums up Ezra perfectly. Season two, it's all trust for him, and he trusts the right people sometimes, and at times he trusts the wrong people. And when you guys see what I'm talking about, you'll know, you'll remember this conversation well. You will, and you'll love it. You will love it.
This is some pirate references, I think, up in here.
Yeah. Oh, no, Hondo we can talk about. I mean, everybody knows about Hondo. That's the fun stuff. He's got some choices to make season two, Ezra does. Choices to make.
Seriously, Corey, I'm sure you agree. As if it wouldn't be more possible to be more excited about this season two.
Right.
Man, this is great because this is exactly what we love, because we like the anticipation, the excitement, but we don't want to know what happened so we get to experience it, you know.
Man,
I'm telling you,
this season is so much better. I love season one, okay? I've seen the episodes more than anybody I know. I watched them with my kids 1,000 times. I watched them on my own just to see where I can improve, what I did really well, what was in the middle. You know, any little edge that I can get is always helpful. And if I'm up late at night, instead of watching sports when they're all over, you know, I'll literally put on a Rebels just to see if there was something that I missed, or if I want to, you know, encourage myself to go further in a certain direction. So I'm hyper familiar with the season. I love season one, and season two is 1,000 times better. It's not even close. The look is so much darker because now they're taking notice of the Rebels, the Empire is, and they're starting to make life difficult for us. So the feel is darker. There's so many more shadows in the animation, and you can see so much more of the atmosphere in the rays of light that like strike through. So the animation itself is just sicker. They had more time, so it's gonna be better. They had more time with the scripts. They had more time to break story. We have more episodes, and you know, Dave Filoni found out that we weren't getting to see all the episodes, and so now he makes sure that we get DVDs or like a link so we can see him, because he wants us to be educated on the episodes before they come out, because he's cool like that. And so I've already seen a few into the future, and it's not even a final version that I'm getting to see. Like, I saw Sarah's episode, and it wasn't the final voice that they were going to put in. And I texted him. I was like, is that the voice? That's sick. It was the first thing I wrote him. And he wrote back. He was like, nah, man, it's way better. Just wait till whatever. I think it was like 2 days later. And it was way better. So, you know, the rough cuts are better than our season one, man. You guys are going to really dig it. You'll really, really dig it. And there's going to be so many of them for everyone to get to talk about and go bananas about and get heartbroken over and jump through the moon over. I'm really looking forward to talking to people about all the craziness that goes on this year.
It sounds fantastic. And since you brought it up, I'll just go ahead and ask the token question that I'm sure you get bombarded with all the time. But what is it like going into season two, knowing that your wife is now officially a part of the Star Wars universe?
It's awesome. I mean, she saw how our daughter reacted when her daddy was basically a Jedi, right? Mm-hmm. And so her and I had spoken about it really early on. I said, you know, you should do something. And I've told her, I'd tell Seth, I'm like, Seth, you should come back. And Seth Green, I was like, you should come back and do something. You know what I mean? Like, I have friends that I reach out to, and Sarah was really open, and they approached me about reaching out to her if she wanted to play one of the heels for season two. And I asked them about the part, and they told me, and I pitched it to her, and she was like, oh my God. And she's like, I get to like hunt you down. I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, we're doing that. And so she did. It was really easy. During the recording of that, I was going through my recovering from spine surgery. So we never recorded with each other one time. And she actually recorded all the Kanan dialogue. at the episodes that I wasn't at when she was there, and just did her Freddy impression. And
you gotta love that.
Yeah, with all the other actors there. So they all got to be friendly and got to know each other and have love for each other now. But we literally never saw each other in the booth.
Wow. And so then now you've got – is this something that your kids are really excited about too, the fact that you're both going to be on?
Yeah, once we were allowed to tell Charlie – because you can't – I didn't want to have to put that kind of a secret on she was five at the time.
Sure.
In a school where every single one of the kids has a Star Wars Rebels backpack. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's just too much pressure for a preschooler to handle. So, you know, once you know, it was going to be more public knowledge and it wasn't a secret, then we showed her. She's seen like the first four episodes already. So she's ahead of the game in that regard. But I don't worry about her giving spoilers to episodes away. They got so much stuff going on in her school now. She doesn't have time.
You gotta love that. Well, you know, and honestly, when you're reaching out to people to have guest appearances, Corey and I would make great AT-AT drivers. I'm just saying.
Oh, you guys do. You could do an AT-AT voice for sure.
Because Dave did in the last one, I believe.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, you could do a "You There, Halt." You got that one down. You could be a stormtrooper number 7.
There you go.
Love that.
For number 5, but 7, I'll do. I'll roll with that.
Nah, Steve's 1 through 6, bro. So no.
He's got a bit more experience.
I'm usually 7. I'm giving you my role because I'm generous like that.
I appreciate that. I toast to you with my coffee with Kenobi mug, which you have.
I do have a Kenobi mug, man.
What if we get Sarah one now?
That's right. You do need. Well, hers will be tea.
Oh, there
hers
you go.
Will be tea with Kenobi.
So it's been great talking to you, Freddie. I know you have a great presence online. How can folks can reach out to you, ask you a question, or just say hello?
I have Twitter right now. It's Real FP Junior, just JR, not the whole word. And I'll have Instagram pretty soon. My cookbook editor is getting on my case about not having it, so I'm getting on it, and I'll have that soon too. But I don't have a title or anything for it yet. I haven't signed up, even though I should have. So hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I mean, I hope she does, but I hope she doesn't.
Sure, we're
just
with
not
you.
Not this part.
Absolutely. Well, Freddie, again, it's such a pleasure and a joy to speak with you. We look forward to chatting with you in the future, and best of luck with the rest of season 2, and hopefully many, many more seasons of Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, man. There's a cool halfway point. I think we should get together again then, because there'll be a couple milestones for Kanan that we can discuss, both positive and negative. And we can fill a lot of time just talking about that silly stuff. It'll be good.
Sounds great, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, fellas. Take care. Be good.
More to add, do you?
Hey guys, regarding this season of Rebels and character development, what's really been interesting to me is Kanan and what seems to be more of a regression than a progression. To me, and what we've seen so far, which isn't a lot, we've only seen 3 episodes to this point, is that Kanan feels a lot more like the version that we saw in A New Dawn, where he's very much independent and not really excited about joining up with a group of people. He's very hesitant, as opposed to being the leader, it seems, this season. But part of that is definitely due in part to dealing with the clones. And as a former Jedi, now active Jedi again, it makes perfect sense that he'd be hesitant to work with the group of people who executed Order 66 and killed all of his friends and, of course, his master. But what if you stop and think about it for a second, it's not just that these are part of the same group. These are actually the same faces, the same voices, the same body language of the people who murdered his master. It's kind of mind-blowing, actually. So it gives you a little bit more insight into Kanan and makes it a lot easier to see his point of view. Anyway, that's all I got. Hope you guys are having a great show. Talk to you later. Bye.
You know, as always, Craig has a lot of very intelligent thoughts, and he expresses them intelligently. Always makes me sound a little, makes me feel a little dumb when I talk to Craig, because he is so smart. But
that's how you feel when you talk to me, right?
As far as you know. but it's not something I even thought of, but he's absolutely right. There is a little bit of a regression there, but I think you can absolutely, if you want to use the word blame it on or attribute it to the fact that it's not like he's seeing soldiers that knew people that he served with. These people, these are the exact faces that he remembers, albeit, several years older. But these are it would be like running into an ex. I can only imagine after a really messy breakup. I know you don't know anything about that, Dan, but he's absolutely right. And I think he's right about that being probably the reason behind it, if there is any sort of regression that's happening.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's kind of ironic too, because he basically mentioned a lot of things that we talked about with Freddie in the discussion, which I thought was cool. And yeah, the relationship between Kanan and Rex is such that, unfortunately, on recent episodes of Rebels that we've seen, we've really seen how that could possibly go. There's tension there, but there's also some begrudging respect, more so from Kanan than Rex. And so it's going to be fun to see how it evolves. So, Craig, we appreciate it, of course, as always, your thoughts and your MP3. Our topic for show number 47 is a Legends line. What are some of the iconic stories from this amazing line that speak to you? What makes these works so powerful? And what do you think should still be canon? Joining us on this topic are the hosts of Legends Library, Randy Theriau and Luke Siders. Be sure to send us an email or MP3 with your thoughts, comments, questions, and opinions to feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Hano, buddy, do you read me?
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
Our first email comes from Dean, who is one of the co-directors and lead developer of the Old Republic Rescue Mission. And he says, "Hello, Coffee with Kenobi hosts. We're an independent team of Knights of the Old Republic fans and filmies who've banded together to create a Star Wars fan-made short film based on lore from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic video game. It is an original story featuring Mission Val and Revan set between the events of the KOTOR game and Drew Karpyshyn's novel Star Wars The Old Republic Raven. We've had a local cinema premiere on Sunday, October 18th, and a successful online release on YouTube on Thursday, October 22nd. We've received an astounding amount of positive feedback across Facebook, YouTube, Reddit, and Kotaku. We were wondering if you'd be interested in doing a segment on our project. With the upcoming release of Episode 7, Star Wars news is thick across many platforms, and we would be ecstatic to be part of the rising tide. We'd also document, share, and archive all news and reviews for TORRM. We've been heralded as one of the best fan-made films of all time, and we'd wish to leave a legacy." And they've attached a press kit and full of all the information we may need. Dan, what do you think about this proposition?
I thought it was neat, and I thought it was really, really impressive how much work and effort they put into this thing. It is beautiful. It's professional. The way they reached out to us, I thought was really nice. But everyone who reaches out to us really is pretty cool and very kind in their enthusiasm for our show and for Star Wars. So it's definitely hats off to Dean and company. And be sure to check it out, because they clearly love their Star Wars and know their Star Wars. So it's a pretty awesome thing. I'm really in awe of it, to be honest.
Outstanding.
Our second email is actually a tweet or a DM that Mediocre Jedi sent to us. And he said, "By the way, Jawa James went in person to buy 100 tickets for San Diego people. He'd arrange a Facebook event and had everybody fill out Google Docs. But the ticket site failed, and he left his house to go buy all the tickets himself. And that is an MVP."
Okay.
And he said that might be a good story for the podcast. Yeah, that is awesome. Jawa James, we got to meet him in Celebration very briefly. Didn't get to talk to him as long as I would have liked to, but there was a lot going on. And we will certainly look forward to that in the future. But that is a class act all around. So hats off to you, Jawa James, for doing that. Very, very cool.
Our next email comes from Mike Taggart. And Mike asks a question that a lot of people probably have. He says, I've been a big Star Wars fan since I was a kid. I know there is a lot more out there than the movies, which is what I was raised on. But I don't know what is real part of the actual story and series and what is fake slash made up by the fans. So my question, is there an official set of books, ones that are part of the movies and more connected to them? With all the fan stuff out there, I'm not even sure where to start looking. My son knows more about Star Wars than I ever did and do now. He loves watching the cartoons, Clone Wars, and Rebels, and those official Star Wars shows. Are those official Star Wars shows that give you more insight about Star Wars? Are they true to the real stories? Side note, I am an audiobook nerd and love to listen while I work with the time that I have. I want to fill my head with more real Star Wars info. Can you please point me in the right direction? Thank you for your time, Mike Taggart. And, you know, Mike, ever since the Disney takeover, there's been a lot of consternation about what happened with all of the stories that came before. And they're now in, I believe they're called Legends, correct, Dan?
That is correct.
They're considered Legends. So they're not...
Legends Library.
They're not canon, so they wouldn't be quote-unquote real stories. But there's still some great storytelling out there. So I wouldn't let that deter you from looking them up. But there is a line of books coming out in the build-up to The Force Awakens. I think there have been over 20 books that have been out over the last couple of months, right, Dan?
There's been a ton, and I was really happy to get this email from Mike because I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to the show that are not sure about what to follow, how to keep track of it, and it is pretty wild. I was recently on WMBD, a local radio station here, and they asked me how these things are connected. Is there someone in charge? So I told them about the Lucasfilm Story Group, of course, and talked about that a little bit. And for Mike, what I told him was, of course, the movies, Clone Wars and Rebels. And I told him, look, the comics, the Marvel comics that have been done this year, that's canon. And then the novels, starting with The New Dawn and anything that's published after A New Dawn, those are canonical as well. So we're talking about A New Dawn, then Tarkin, and then Lords of the Sith, Heir to the Jedi, Battlefront, Dark Disciple. What am I missing?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Oh, Aftermath. Of course, Aftermath.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I think that's all of them. I'm surprised I don't have the top of my head. But it,
and, of course, the Shattered Empire in the comics has just wrapped up as well. And
yes.
And to answer your question, Rebels and Clone Wars are considered canon, which would be,
right,
to use your term, real Star Wars, so you can enjoy those. But, again, I would not let the canonicity of any story keep you from enjoying it. I think that's a word, and if it's not, it is now.
It now has become part of the lexicon of Coffee with Kenobi.
I wouldn't let that keep you from it because specifically Darth Plagueis is, I guess, no longer considered canon. But that's a great story.
It's a wonderful story. And when you say no longer canon, it was never canon, just to be clear.
Dan's a nerd, folks.
That sounded very snarky. Again, the first time Steve Sansweet was on, the Expanding Universe is a wonderful, wonderful, amazing series of stories, but they've never been canon. They've been canonical in their own little universe, much like the comics. We're going to talk about this a lot more in our next show with Randy and Luke from Legends Library. But Jeff is, of course, spot on, as he always is. Those Legends stories are wonderful. There's so much to them. They're so rich, and you flesh out these characters in very unique ways. Now, some things have trumped them, but the core of who they are and what makes them so appealing is still there. So hopefully, Mike, that gives you a little bit of a direction. And you can always email us again, and we can try to get that exact list for you the best we can. There's also a lot of them. If you Google, you know, Star Wars canon, you're going to get a pretty comprehensive list, including short stories and Star Wars Insider and video games and specific titles of the comics and issues, too. So keep on exploring, my friend. There's a great, big, beautiful Star Wars world out there, and we can't wait to see what you think about it. Our next email, I'm excited to read all of our emails, but this one has a particular place in my heart. It's from Patrick Scullin, who we had the good fortune of meeting and hanging out with and waiting in line with at Celebration Anaheim on day one. And actually, you met him too, Jeff. But he says, hey, guys, let me just say I love the show. It's so much fun to listen to your intelligent brand of Star Wars talk. While listening the other day, this idea popped into my head. I wanted to show Obi-Wan enjoying a cup of joe after a long night of battle during the Clone Wars. I was glad to share the development process with you guys over the past few days on Twitter.
I've attached the high-res version to this email. You guys are welcome to use it as you please. If you remember, we met at Star Wars Celebration. I have to be standing behind you guys and Adam Bright in the line for the Force Awakens panel. I recognize you from my Facebook feed and thought it was a funny coincidence to be sitting next to you. I was originally turned on to your podcast by my friend Troy Metzler.
Troy!
How about that? We went to high school together. Anyway, what a wonderful year to be a Star Wars fan, isn't it? Hope to hang out with you guys again soon. Take care, Patrick Skull. And if you have seen our Facebook Coffee with Kenobi profile picture, that's Patrick's work, and it is stunning.
You're absolutely right. This is great work.
Isn't it awesome?
And I love, yeah, he's even got your banner on the coffee cup.
I know.
The coffee with Kenobi. This is great.
It is. I mean, and I've said this a million times, but I can't draw a straight line with a ruler.
Oh, me either.
I see someone like Patrick with his talent. And in fact, he spent a lot of time on this for our show, and we really appreciate it. And Patrick, I agree. I hope we get to hang out with you again soon. And thank you for sharing your time and talent with us in the Star Wars community. And can't wait to see all the awesome things that you have to provide for Star Wars fandom in the future. Thanks again so much for doing this.
I just have to say, the face is the perfect combination of the animated Obi-Wan and Ewan McGregor.
I know.
That is amazing, Patrick. Nice job. Our final email comes to one of our Patreon contributors, Jessie, who is affiliated with Stardust Legacy, and she sends us an email saying, each autumn, gamers from all over play marathon gaming sessions as a fundraiser for Extra Life. Extra Life is a part of the Children's Miracle Network charity, which is a highly rated organization for hospitalized kids. I'm very familiar. Participants choose which hospital they want to receive their pledges. This is the third year that Unholy Alliance is playing Star Wars The Old Republic for the event. Each participant on the team pledges to play for either a full 24-hour marathon or a 12-hour half marathon. The team member generally donates a few dollars themselves and then asks friends and family to sponsor them for completing the marathon. For team members, it's a lot of fun to get together with other people who love the game and to do special events created just for the marathon while at the same time helping critically ill children and their families. For donors, there are unique prizes to be won this year, including a Sphero BB-8 droid, I want one, Star Wars The Old Republic, cartel coin cards, cartel packs, rare in-game items, and other Star Wars-related prizes that will be announced as the event draws near. Portions of the event will be streamed by the well-known Star Wars The Old Republic video producer, Volk. Thank you again, Jesse, a.k.a. Stardust Legacy, at Unholy Alliances. And we have a bumper that they sent us here that we'll play, which will explain this in a little bit more detail.
This is JT.
And this is Jesse from Passionately Casual Podcast.
And you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Did you know that November 7th is Extra Life Day? Extra Life benefits Children's Miracle Network hospitals, and gamers all over the world get involved by playing 12 or 24 hours straight.
We'd like to invite you to join our team and play with us, or sponsor the team with a donation today.
To find out more about the event and the cool prizes you can win with your donation, including a Sphero BB-8 app-enabled droid,
please go to unholyalliance.org/extra-life.
Play games.
Feel kids.
Yeah, thank you, Jessie, for sending that in. She's been a great supporter of our show for a long time, and we really appreciate that. And this is a wonderful thing that's going on. I hope that everybody gets a chance to check it out and support it best we can. And the time is running short for this promotion, so be sure to check it out and do what you can to help out this worthy cause. From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 to feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for any of us individually, you can email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com, coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or jeffm@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section, or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed, @coffeewithkenobi. There's no I in with. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Turok on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 46 of Coffee with Kenobi. A huge thank you to Freddie Prinze Jr. for coming on and for discussing the start of Season 2 of Rebels with us. Be sure to listen to our review show, Rebels Reactions, for the latest in-depth analysis of this great animated series.
And a special shout-out again to Mediocre Jedi, Mike Audette, Neil Lowry, Dennis Keithley, Angela Souse, Mark Sutter, Graham Densham, Jesse, and Laughing Says for their contributions to our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page. By supporting our Patreon page, you too can win a coffee chat podcast of your own. Check out our website or the show notes for more information. You can also support the show by using our Amazon.com affiliate link, as well as by purchasing your Force Awakens movie tickets through the banner on the front page of our website.
Thanks also to Rob of the Bearded Trio, media specialist Lisa Dullard, our Coffee with Kenobi bloggers, everyone who contributed to this show, and to all of you out there who listen to and email Coffee with Kenobi. Don't forget to send us your comments and opinions on the topic for show number 47, The Legends Line.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.